primary financial statements, and I will give the floor to Aida, who will then hand over to Ilham.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Hans, and hello, everyone. It's really great to be back at ASAF discussing primary financial statements. We very much look forward to discussion in the next 90 minutes. So what we will do in this 90 minutes is discuss feedback and redeliberation plan for PFS, and asking you for advice on balancing risks and benefits on the project, and in the light of that advice, ask you for suggestions on the redeliberations plan. So how we will run this discussion, we're going to split it in parts. So first, I'm gonna give you a general overview of the feedback and general approach to redeliberations, and ask for any general comments or questions. And then after that, I will pass over to Ilhong, and he is going to run through feedback and redeliberation plan for each group of our proposals in the exposure draft, and stopping after each group to ask you questions on slide three of the agenda paper one, as they relate to that particular group of proposals. So we will discuss them group by group, just to make sure we give each group the attention that they deserve. And I just want to highlight, when we come to management performance measure discussion, as a part of this discussion, we will welcome, in particular, your advice on balancing the benefits of the and the to users and the timeliness with the timeliness of the project with respect to the scope of management performance measures, something we'll be discussing with the board next week. So with that, I will launch into introduction. So the proposals in the exposure draft have created lots of interest with our stakeholders, and we are really grateful for all the input we have received. But I want to give special thanks to you, ASAF members, because I know how hard you worked. I'm just stopping because I heard echo, but it seems to be okay now.
Somebody needs to mute.
No, it's not. Okay, let's try again. Oh, great. Okay. So, I was just saying thank you, and thank you very much. And I know how much effort you have put in, and I know you put in all our consultations, but I personally witnessed that on the PFS, you know, all the various outreach events you have organized and run to discuss with the stakeholders, the help and facilitation of the fieldwork exercise, and then preparation of the very high-quality comment letters, which were really helpful. So thank you very much. We really could not have done this without you. You know, during this process, it felt some of you like were closer than maybe some of my colleagues in the office, because we saw each other so much. We worked very, very closely together in this exercise. And, you know, this is no surprise to you that overall the proposals were very well received by stakeholders, and in particular by users of financial statements, who have expressed strong agreements with the project objectives and also specific proposals. And when we talk about specific proposals, we think the feedback suggested the most support for proposals for subtotals, as well as management performance measures, but also disaggregation principles, as well as proposals relating to the statement of cash flows. And then we had general support, but also lots of practical concerns expressed in relation to proposals for unusual income and expenses, and also proposals relating to minimum line items. And then in the final bucket of quite mixed views is the proposals relating to integral and non-integral associate and joint ventures, and proposals relating to analysis of operating expenses by nature and by function. So So we had this feedback, and then we had to think, how do we plan redeliberation? So when planning redeliberations, when approaching this exercise, we said, okay, let's identify what are the key factors we need to consider in planning, and those are set out on slide 6. And then considering these factors, then we developed general approach to redeliberation, which basically involved grouping project topics in those that we label priority topics, and the other group, which is topics that require a staged approach. So this is set out on slides 7 and 8. So when we talk about priority topics, we prioritize those that are in the project focus area and those for which were well received and which can be finalized efficiently. So applying that approach, we include in this group proposals relating to subtotals, also management performance measures, disaggregation principles, and proposals relating to cash flows. You will see in the paper there are some exceptions to that, in that there are aspects of these proposals for which we still would want to apply staged approach, so which I will discuss in a moment. But for these priority topics, the idea is that initial papers go straight into asking the board to confirm the approach and may also include detailed analysis of some of the alternatives. And you have seen maybe some of those papers which we'll be discussing with the board next week. And then staged approach is, we plan to apply this to the topics that have received more of a mixed feedback or have multiple ways forward and could involve changes in project scope. So what this approach means is that we would initially in the papers ask the board to discuss and confirm general direction for this particular topic before going into the detailed alternatives that we could consider, which we think will enable us to be more efficient with how we use the time, both time of the board and the time of the team. So this staged approach is something we are planning to apply to discussions on the scope of management performance measures. I mentioned this briefly in introduction as well. Then analysis of operating expenses, unusual income and expenses, minimum line items, and proposals relating to integral and non-integral associates and joint ventures. So this is really a very general overview of the feedback and how we plan to approach redeliberations. And I will, before handing over to Hong, I'm just going to pause for any general comments or questions, but I would like to encourage you maybe not to dive into the detailed discussion, because it will be more beneficial if we could just discuss that as we go through the individual topics.
Okay, let's see if anybody wants to make general comments, perhaps about the general approach. Chiara.
Yes, thank you. Well, in general, we welcome this approach. It seems to be an efficient way to proceed. However, we also have heard from preparers that they are worried about the piecemeal approach for the effective date. So they would like a big bang for the implementation and a clear path to plan the modifications to the data models and the IT.
Okay, that's clear. So a big bang rather than a stage introduction of the requirements.
Thanks, Chiara. If I can just use opportunity to clarify, so the staged versus non-staged approach is not something we considered in the context of the effective date discussion, and we do hope we'll be able to meet the requirements as you just set out.
Any other comments? I suppose you all have a lot of comments about the specific proposals. So perhaps we can go to that part. And I give the... Oh, Anne, did you want to say something? No. So let's go to Ilhong for an overview of the specific requirements. And then we can discuss those one by one. Okay, Ilhong.
Thank you, Hans. So let's move to on slide 10. On slide 10, most respondents, including users, agreed with the proposals to introduce defined subtotals and categories in the statement of profit or loss. They say the proposals have the potential to result in useful information and improve comparability between entities. Most respondents agreed with how the proposals to classify in the operating category would apply to entities with particular main business activities, because the proposals are necessary to allow such entities to present a meaningful operating profit subtotal and would be in line with current practice for entities such as insurers and investment funds or banks. There were also concerns expressed by many, in particular relating to proposals for integral and non-integral associates and joint ventures, and also some of the details of the proposals for other categories. Many respondents said it was important for the board to provide additional guidance to achieve comparability between entities. In particular, respondents suggested the board should clarify the terms main business activities and in the course of main business activities, because those terms play an important role in determination of operating profit. Many respondents said it is confusing that the proposed labels for the categories in the statement of profit or loss, so that is operating, investing, and financing, are similar to the labels of the categories in the statement of cash flows, although the content of the categories is different. Many respondents expressed concerns about the proposals to classify income and expenses from foreign exchange differences, derivatives, and hedging instruments in categories to which they relate. They questioned whether the benefits of the proposals would outweigh the cost. Finally, many respondents expressed concerns about the accounting policy choice the board proposed for entities that provide finance to customers as a main business activity, mainly because they think it would undermine the comparability of operating profit. Some respondents suggested replacing the accounting policy choice with a practical expedient. On slide 11, the initial paper focuses on the proposals related to operating profit, which has now been posted for board discussion next week. To manage the complexity of discussions, the board will discuss the aspect of proposals relating to main business activities in later papers. The slide lists main topics that will also be covered in subsequent papers. This includes proposals relating to associates and joint ventures, which in the light of feedback received, the board will discuss using staged approach, first confirming the objective and scope before discussing the details. I will now start for discussion relating to subtotals, specifically asking for your advice on which, if any, of proposals of subtotals and categories do you think are the most important for the success of this project and why? Which, if any, proposals relating to subtotals and categories do you see as the greatest risks for project timeliness, and how do you suggest we manage those risks? In the light of your responses to the above questions, do you have any suggestions for the board deliberations planning relating to subtotals and categories? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ilham. Let's see who wants to speak. You, can I ask you to go on mute, please? You? Yes, thank you. Okay. Who can I give the... Oh, Nobu.
Thank you very much. So we think the project would be a success if the ISB can define operating profit in a way that everyone is comfortable. And in our view, the other subtotals are relatively less important, and we think they should not be required for all entities. And just as it's required under paragraph 85 of IS 1 today, they should be presented when the entity believes that subtotal is relevant. We take the view that the operating profit should be directly defined rather than being defined as a residual. But we understand from the feedback that was reported by the ISB staff that we are in the minority camp. But in terms of the order of discussion, we do want to suggest that the ISB discuss whether a different definition of operating profit should be used for entities with the main activities being financing and investing activities. Your rules, proposed rules, basically are defining a different operating profit, and therefore we would prefer to have a principle-based, consistent approach across all entities, given that certain conglomerates can have both an manufacturing and financing or investing arm within the conglomerate. And so, therefore, whenever we discuss this operating profit, we suggest that you don't do just for the non-financing, non-investing entities first, but to do it all together in the first place. That would be our comment for the subtotals. Thank you.
Okay. Chiara?
Yes, just to follow up what also Nobu was saying. Also for us, it's key, the definition of operating profit. However, it's also it seems also logic when operating profit is defined to identify the treatment of joint ventures in this respect. So it's not obvious to leave the integral non-integral debate for a second step. And similarly, also on page 11, the model for entities with particular business activities should be part of the first paper in the definition of operating profit, because otherwise we risk a sectorial approach, whereas financial institutions will be initially out from the first proposal.
Okay. Jim?
Yes, we also agreed that this should be a priority topic, particularly the operating profit piece. You asked about which might be challenges. When we've tried to define operating profit, I think we see agreement on 80 or 90% of the issues, that there's agreement this should be operating. It's the same issues that you see of calling in and out on the issues at the margin, but that's important. The other pressure we've had, and I suspect will happen as well, is you won't get consensus amongst preparers on the definition of operating. In the U.S., they've already come up with their own definitions of operating. Of course, if we standardize that, that's going to change it for some, because it won't be how they've defined it. So I think it will be hard to seek consensus on how people do it today. But that's a natural byproduct of coming up with a standard. And so I think it links well with the management performance measures. What we've heard is if we define operating, it won't be how the company sees it. And so they will come up with a non-GAAP number to define operating how they have in the past. But if this is integrated with management performance measures, I think that works as an integrated approach. So, of course, that then becomes separate topic, but also a priority.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. Linda?
Thank you. I'd like to kind of support a lot of what I heard from Nobu, but also what Jim just said. I mean, as a standard setter, it's really nice when people actually favorably receive something you're doing. And so I want to emphasize how important this project is and how supported it is from a Canadian perspective. Most of our stakeholders are very enthusiastic about this project. I agree completely that the subtotals and the definition of an operating profit are extremely important. But I do also agree that if you don't consider, banks and insurance companies, et cetera, in the first wave, there's going to be a huge sector that's not really into this piece of the puzzle. And we think that the definition of an operating profit was widely supported, of course, by our users, 100% by our users, but surprisingly, even some of our preparers were more enthusiastic about getting some definitive guidance on what could be called operating so that they could get more comparability across their sectors. So we do think it probably needs to be integrated with management performance measures. That makes a lot of sense. I'll save comments on that for later. But really, in support of what Nobu and Jim have already said, we think it's very important to move that forward. Thank you.
Okay. EH.
Thank you. Well, we have been supporting the subtotals and categorization. So I think that's the critical success factors. So we still support that. But one thing is that the term operating profit, that is somewhat confusing to Korea, because we have been using the term in different way. So we kept saying that if there is any possibility that you can have a slightly different name, that will be good for Korea. I think the same thing will be for some other countries. Like I thought China may have the same issues. So that's one thing. And the other thing is some risky factor. Korea has been keeping sort of opposing to distinction between interior and non-interior for many different reasons. And I don't want to repeat the reason, but I think that is still the issues. And I understand that there are many countries who has the same concern. So I think this is something you really have to revisit and think about whether this is something to change this time. That's it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, AH. Mark?
Thank you. I agree with many of the comments that have been made so far, and certainly our engagement with UK stakeholders is supportive of the proposals, and indeed the analysis that the staff provided on slide 5 is something that strikes a chord with a number of the people that we've spoken to. I suppose the question that I would raise is that there is very strong support and real encouragement for some of the proposals in the first column, which really help with comparability. And I wonder whether it sort of takes back to the earlier comment about are these measures a sort of big bang series of proposals that come in together? Or are there things that potentially are quick wins for the board, particularly things like the subtotals and categories and the management performance measures? And are there other things that, in a sense, might delay the project and therefore could be sort of fed back into the board's wider consideration of what it's doing with the agenda consultation that we're due to discuss later on? So I think we're sort of very comfortable with the proposals, but I think there's a real anticipation to see early progress on some of those measures, and perhaps some of them are less of a priority as a result.
You?
Okay, thank you, Hans. Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, but we cannot
can
see you.
Can you hear me?
We would like to see you too. Yes. Okay. Thank you, Yuchen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we see you now.
Yeah. Okay. Generally, we support the proposal, and we agree that the subtotal is very important for this project, and we agree to move forward. However, we have some concerns similar to others. Number one is the integral and the non-integral. Our have already expressed in our comment letter. I will not repeat that again. Number two is the definition of operating activity. Similar to Japan, Korea, and some others, that we think the operating activity should be defined directly. Besides that, the operating category, how to make this distinguishment between the same the same label of operating activities between the statement of cash flow and the statement of P&L. That's the second concern. The number three is the about the definition of main business. because in the ED, they are the main business was appeared in different parts of the ED. Our stakeholders suggest the main business activity should be defined consistently, and they also hope to have some detailed examples or guidance on the main business. That's it. Thank you.
Okay, Won He.
Thank you, Hans. Well, all AOSG members who provided comments for this AISA meeting consider that subtotals and categories the most important proposal for the success of this project. They said subtotals and categories proposal is the foundation of all the proposals in EED and would respond greatly to the user's demand for the improvement in compatibility. And more specifically, one member said that a subtotal operating profit or loss is most important, and this proposal will enhance compatibility. In making comments on this question, AOSG members highlighted some issues. Notably, they thought that it might be necessary to provide more guidance and clearer definition on some key terms, such as main business activities and largely independently of other resources. And I also like to comment that a member mentioned that as there are linkages between subtotals and categories, MPMs and disaggregation principles, it is important to develop these three proposals together. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Won He. Raymond.
Thank you. The feedback that we've had from this part of the world is, I think, a lot of support on the proposals that have been put forward so far. A lot of the feedback has been around the subtitles has been, while people are welcoming it, is I think it's probably long overdue. We seem to have a lot of different people doing different things at the moment. So I think this will certainly introduce some sort of level of consistency in the way that the companies will report. And I think that's going to be an important step forward in terms of just making sure that we've got the right quality of reporting. I guess this sort of extends into management performance measures, which we'll come back to later on, because that's another space where different companies have been doing different things. And I think these two things are seen in a similar sort of light, and hopefully, you know, with some sort of consistency being brought to the fore, it'll enable that reporting or improvements in that reporting going forward. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Raymond. Patrick.
Thank you, Hans. We generally concur and with the remarks which have been made. We are also supportive of the initiative. A quick list of concerns on which to focus. Well, of course, the first one, which has been already mentioned, is the definition of main business activities, because that's crucial for the identification of categories. Second point is we also are a bit uneasy with a negative definition of operating profit as a residual category. So it's something that needs to be worked on if we want to have comparability. Third, maybe the unusual income and expenses are critical in that respect. We think that the definition of integral and non-integral associates should be simplified. We think it's not so challenging. The difference is difficult to the difference between the two categories is difficult to make, and therefore why complexify so much. And finally, we agree with what has been said about not leaving banks and insurance aside. Thank you.
Okay. Aida, would you like to make some comments?
Thank Thank you, Hans, and maybe really summarize what I've heard. And there was lots of consistency in messages that you know, the subtotals are the most important parts of the project for its success, in particular operating profit. But at the same time, I've heard lots of comments about importance of linkages and these proposals going as a package, in particular, you know, between subtotals and management performance measures. I've heard lots of you emphasize that it's important we go and discuss package as it would apply to all companies to manage this risk of being industry. Having industry-specific discussions. And I would like to say that we have really worked hard to achieve that in the first paper that the board is going to discuss next week. Granted, this paper does not discuss main business activities ins and out, just because developing that would require us to have, you know, many more people working on this simultaneously to be able to do it at the same time. But what we have done is we have drafted the discussion and recommendations in a way that they would apply to all companies, with note that specific guidance on what main business activities are and how would they apply is yet to be discussed, but that is no different to specific guidance on, you know, associate and joint ventures or generally what goes in the investing category and does not. So we are trying to be responsive to this, and it's a really tough line, because ideally you want to discuss everything together because there are so many linkages, but that is just not possible. So we are constantly balancing kind of what is the thing we must bring together, what are the things we must defer, and you know, your comments are very helpful just to keep us focused on that, that we don't go down a very, very narrow path. I've also heard your concerns about some of the proposals, and but I'm not going to discuss this right now. I think we'll probably have more opportunities in future meetings as board re-deliberates, as it prepares specific papers on these detailed definitions to discuss this with you.
Okay, thank you, Aida. Let's then move on to the management performance measures. Ilhom.
Okay, let's move to slide 12. Many respondents, including almost all users, agreed with the proposals to require the disclosure of management performance measures in the notes to the financial statements, because including these measures in the financial statements would provide useful information, and the proposed disclosure requirements would bring needed discipline and transparency. Regulators were generally supportive of including management performance measures in the financial statements. Nearly all regulators specifically agreed with the objectives of bringing more transparency and discipline to management performance measures. Most respondents, including most users, agreed with the proposal not to define EBITDA because there was no consensus on what EBITDA represents. Its use varies widely, and it is not applicable to some industries. There were also concerns expressed by many relating to some of the details of the proposals. One of the main concerns expressed was that management performance measures only include subtotals of income and expenses in the statement of profit or loss. Most respondents suggested revising the definition to include other measures, such as those based on items presented in the statement of financial position or the statement of cash flows. These respondents thought that the benefits of the proposals would not be realized without including these additional measures. The slide lists other concerns expressed by many relating to management performance measures proposals. For example, many respondents said that the requiring disclosure of all management performance measures used in public communications is too wide in scope. Most respondents that raised this concern requested additional guidance or suggested a narrower definition of public communications. On slide 13, the initial paper focuses on requirement for management performance measures in financial statements and the scope of management performance measures using staged approach, which has now been posted for board discussion next week. The slide lists main topics that will be covered in subsequent papers, What is your advice as the board starts with the elaborations of the proposals relating to management performance measures? Specifically, which, if any, of the proposals for management performance measures do you think are the most important for the success of this project and why? Which, if any, proposals relating to management performance measures do you see as the greatest risks for the for project timeliness, and how do you suggest we manage those risks? In the light of your responses to the above questions, do you have any suggestions for the board deliberations planning relating to management performance measures? When discussing this, we are particularly interested in your advice on approach to expanding the scope of management performance measures, as this requires balanced potential benefits for users with potential delay to overall project timeliness. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ilhong. Who would like to take the word? Nobu?
Yes, thank you very much, Hans. In our view, there seems to be, or MPM seems to serve two goals, and depending on who you are, you would focus on one of the goals and others would focus on the other. And the two that, that we think are that exist is one is that is to be a substitute for the IFRS defined subtotal. So if you believe that, or if the company believes that the subtotal doesn't really represent your financial performance, so you present another subtotal to show that the financial performance you believe in, that's one way to do the MPMs. The other role or goal seems to be to eliminate APMs. And if you believe in the second goal, I think that's where people would say you want to extend the scope of MPMs to the cash flow statement or possibly the balance sheet or other financial statements. But for the first goal, we would say that it is an extension of the income statement, and therefore the discussion would be limited to issues related to the income statement. And our view is that to complete this project in a timely manner, the ISB should focus on the income statement portion only. And we do understand that there is a need for the second goal, but that should be, we would say, could be separated as a different project or a separate project. Although we internally discussed it, and we believe that eliminating APMs should not be the ultimate goal, as there will be some information that are provided outside of the financial statements that do provide information. And if you start to try to eliminate such subtotals, it will be a potential for reduced disclosures, which we don't think is a good thing. Thank you.
Mark, you just agree with Nobu, or would you like to add?
Sorry, I'm pressing so many buttons. I just think the message that comes out sort of from our stakeholders is some potential concern about the scope of the proposed definition of MPMs, in a sense that it can either be interpreted very broadly, which could potentially delay the benefit, or it could be defined rather narrowly in a sense that it's focusing on the income, income and expenses measures. So, you know, I think, as I said earlier, the message that we're getting is the projects in a sense should be taken forward in a way that allows the benefits that this will deliver to be delivered quickly, and therefore that narrow scope is probably a better outcome.
All right, Linda.
Thank you. So I'd like to, if I could, just build a bit on what Nobu said, because, and I agree with a lot of what he said, but I'd like to offer almost like a hybrid approach. And so I don't think that you can ever envision fully replacing all alternative performance measures or key performance measures or whatever the nomenclature is, because when you think about different industries, there's just a proliferation of them, and many of them have metrics that aren't included directly from the financial statements, like you know, sales per square foot or whatever. Entities use those. They use those routinely. I don't see how you're ever going to make those a derivative of the financial statements. However, if you think about something like a bank, and I do, I this is where I come from, a previous banker, something like a concept of return on net assets is integral. They manage their balance sheet, and therefore I can see that as an easy extension from what you've already defined as a management performance measure. And then you're bringing in some of the key metrics from those types of financing entities, and you're not totally excluding them, and it would be meaningful. The other benefit to try to find some appropriate scope that doesn't go too far and take too long to define for management performance measures is there are certain objections to the notion of including these items in the financial statements that I think if you did something early on and you got people used to it, both preparers and auditors and regulators used to it, you'd overcome some of those fears and some of those objectives. So when I was reading some of the ISB's papers, they talked about an increased cost of putting the management performance measures in the financial statements. I personally, as a former preparer, don't buy that because management's already doing the work anyway. And so I think it's a limited adjustment to putting in measures to make sure they have the underlying support for the internal controls assessment that need to do around these and then getting the auditors on board. Another objection was there's a challenge. There's no framework for these measures, so we can't audit that. Certainly they can audit it because simply that management saying, here's what I've done to compute the measure, that's what they're auditing. They may actually have to change some wording in their opinion if these are deemed to be so material. But I think the auditors are well equipped to overcome some of those objectives. So I think there's some usefulness to trying to early on say this is the bucket we're going to move forward with and get and move that forward, much like Mark said, an early win for everybody because it overcomes some of these objectives initially and helps everybody get acclimatized to the notion of kind of moving past the silos where this is, you know, the notion that certain things are only in the management commentary and other things are only in the financial statements, and yet the user uses these documents, together. And so if we could overcome some of those objections early on, I think it would help people move forward.
Okay, thank you, Linda. Chiara.
Yes. Well, irrespective of the decision to focus initially on P&L only and go for a broader definition after, I think looking at page 13, that the definition of public communication is an integral part of the scoping of the MPMs. So it should be part of the first discussion.
Okay. Jim?
So I agree with many of the comments that Linda made, have tried to be just incremental, and I think to the extent that you finalize the operating and other subtotal measures, I do think that this becomes even more important. I think that will provide a more standardized view to users, but that may not align with how management views performance, and it will create incentive to provide additional MPMs if management doesn't view performance in that same standardized way. So having that ability then to have a greater degree of rigor around those management performance measures might become even more important. And I think one of the things that was interesting to me was the feedback on not defining a measure like EBITDA. I guess one question about whether that's more of a cash flow measure or an income measure, but we're getting input as we're starting our agenda consultation process. One of the things we're getting is input that we should define measures like EBITDA, because of course they're not standardized and management uses them as performance. I don't know what the right answer is, but I do think if it's not defined, it has the potential to then have users misunderstand that my measure of EBITDA as a management performance measure may not be comparable at all to someone else's measure of EBITDA. And so maybe the trade-off is making sure you have sufficient disclosure at a pretty detailed level of what your measure is, not just income before interest, tax, amortization, and depreciation, but actually what are in those individual components, because that's where the difference lies. And so I think, and that could be true with any performance measure. So I think allowing that flexibility for management to continue to report their measure, but sufficient disclosure at a pretty detailed level of what that measure is, because I think users won't have an understanding that those are not comparable comparable measures without that disclosure.
Okay, thank you, Jim. You?
Okay, thank you, Hans. Based on the feedback from the stakeholders in China, we have some concerns about the disclosure requirement for MPM in the ED. 2 points. The first one, people think the MPM proposed in the ED are too broad in scope, and it's difficult to identify such measures. Second point is that people are concerned that this requirement are beyond the scope of the auditing and will bring challenges to auditors when such kind when such MPM were disclosed in the notes. Stakeholders also provide some suggestions. First one, simplify the disclosure requirement. Second, narrow the scope. Third, provide more guidance to help entities make appropriate judgment. Fourth, maybe disclose MPM in other part of the financial report instead of in the notes. That's what we heard from the stakeholders so far. Thank you.
Okay, Patrick?
What I wanted to say is probably slightly different from what you just said, because I think MPMs are a great improvement in general, because you clarify the comparability and you increase reliability. So it's key. Therefore, we feel that. By the way, I don't see where we could locate MPMs if it was not in the notes. Quite frankly, should it be in the management report? But in this case, it would be difficult, I think. So we tend to be in favor of increasing the scope beyond performance and income. I also concur with Jim on the idea that a clear concept, well, a concept that is not that clear, but that is very, very usual, is EBITDA, and it's difficult not to give some flesh around the bone around that, because we would be missing the target to a certain extent. So that's what I wanted to say. I know it's a bit difficult, because the idea of the MPMs is highly supportive, but it creates then the difficulty to define and to create the framework for reporting that. I think that the way that has been chosen is a reasonable way, because having a level of flexibility. I think that the key goal is to reduce APMs anyway. That wouldn't be related to the financial statements, because that's where the ambiguity lies, quite frankly. So support to an increased scope and including maybe things like EBITDA.
Well, Patrick, what do you mean by including EBITDA? Would you include on the face?
No, not on the face. No, in the notes.
In the notes. But with our proposals, people are free to do so, no?
Yes, but that would be a good idea, that if they use EBITDA in their communication or in their management report, that this be defined in the notes.
Sure, my view. Yeah. Well, that's what they will be obliged to do with our...
Yeah.
Those, I believe. Okay, thank you. Raymond? Raymond, sorry.
Thank you, Hans. No, I'm not French. Just to echo a lot of what's been said this afternoon or today, I think from where we sit, I think there's been a lot of support for MTMs. It hasn't. MTMs are not so much a concern for the non-listed companies, but certainly in the listed space, different people are doing different things again. And I think there's a need there to streamline what it is that companies are doing, what information they're providing out into the public domain, and how they provide that information. So just to echo what everybody else said, I think there's a lot of support for it to provide a lot more guidance as to management performance measures are provided and how they are determined. The one thing that we've spoken about in reading the paper, EBITDA has come up quite a lot, and I'd like to echo Jim's comment, Patrick's comment as well, because I think in our space, EBITDA analysts are looking to as well to try and understand how well or how badly companies are doing. So that for us, I think, would be something that would need to be a lot more defined, buttoned down a lot better than it currently is, and that will also help with the consistency of reporting. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, so far, I must say I am really pleased and also a bit surprised about the support for the MPM approach that we chose, because it took us quite some time to get there. And while developing the ideas, there was also quite a bit of opposition, sometimes from from the regulatory sphere. But it seems to me that we have found the right approach in the end. And this is a really important part of the proposal. So, I'm very pleased to see that it seems to be broadly supported. Okay, Ilhong.
Hans, sorry, do you mind if I just say a few things again? Yeah, no, just kind of wrap up. It's it really helpful feedback, and I think again illustrates the difficulty that the board is going to have in landing on the scope finally, because some of you said, well, look, clearly it's important, finalize this quickly, be consistent with our focus on the structure of the P&L and keep the scope narrow. But then on the other hand, I think some of these other things could maybe be seen as a low hanging fruit. And I think this comes to, many of you have discussed eliminating APMs as an objective, but I wouldn't describe that as an objective, because what MPMs are trying to achieve is bring transparency and discipline to APMs. APMs are not going to go away. And when you put it that way, then quite rightly, I would say users tell us, well, just as much as I want transparency of adjusted operating profits, I want transparency of Windows, return on capital employed measure, because they are no different. They are both useful in my analysis. And I think when you look at it that way, it becomes harder to defend the limited scope. But then, there is also things like objective of the project and the focus of the project and, which one prevails from the board. So that will be very interesting discussion that, we are going to have. And it's quite interesting discussion about EBITDA, and it's like a deja vu back to the time we were finalizing these discussions with the board, which was very got people very excited and all of us. I think it's again worth clarifying, the board has in effect defined EBITDA in the exposure draft, but not called it EBITDA. And, I'm not going to go again into the explanation. This is not a technical session today, why we didn't use the label EBITDA at that time. The feedback actually is that users seem to have gotten comfortable with that approach, but discussion today suggests that maybe not right. So maybe that is something that, it would need to be considered. So we certainly take that feedback on board. Thank you. Thank you very much again.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to disaggregation. Ilhong.
Yeah, let's move to slide 14. Most respondents, including most users, agreed with the proposal for the roles of primary financial statements and the notes and principles for disaggregation. Many respondents, including users, said the proposals improve clarity and consistent application across entities and ensure material information is not obscured. Some respondents said that the definition of unusual income and expenses is subjective to a large degree of judgment, including how to apply proposals for limited predictive value, similar in time and amount, and several future annual reporting periods. Some respondents asked for the rational or conceptual basis for the minimum line items and further guidance and clarification on the application of materiality to minimum line items. Some respondents asked additional guidance on how to determine shared characteristics and the minimum level of disaggregation. A few respondents suggested quantitative threshold or a reputable one for general disaggregation and other items. Many respondents, mainly preparers and their representative bodies, along with a few users, disagreed with the proposal to prohibit an entity from mixing the methods of analysis of expenses, because the mixed method provides the most useful information and the proposals will not enhance comparability, especially with those companies applying U.S. GAAP. Some respondents asked the board to clarify the relationship between the minimum line items and the proposal to prohibit the mixed method for presenting operating expenses. Many respondents, mainly preparers, disagreed with the proposal to require an entity to disclose an analysis of expenses by nature in the notes if they present analysis expenses by function. Because both methods are equally relevant, but the proposals seem to favor by nature analysis, and the cost of providing the analysis by nature will be higher than the benefits, including some entities that may not be able to provide the analysis with their existing systems. On slide 15, the initial paper focuses on roles of the primary financial statement and the notes and disaggregation principles. The slide lists the main topics that will be covered in subsequent papers using staged approach. What is your advice as the board starts deliberations of the proposals relating to disaggregation? Specifically, which, if any, proposals for disaggregation do you think are the most important for the success of this project and why? Which, if any, proposals relating to disaggregation do you see as the greatest risks for project timeliness, and how do you suggest we manage those risks? In the light of your responses to the above question, do you have any suggestions for the board re-deliberations planning relating to disaggregation? Thank you.
All right. We open the floor.
Yes, for one specific item, for unusual income and expenses, it doesn't look this didn't have any strong support because it's in the second line. But I think it's important to have unusual income and expenses. Definitely in disclosures, even though it may be very difficult to define and identify in practice, but I think the unusual income and expenses should be separately identified and disclosed. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Rich. Alberto.
Yes, thank you. We are disappointed of the proposal, implicit proposal to remove the existing requirement to disclose expenses by nature for those companies which normally use the classified expenses by function. Although we understand from the responses that this present requirement is not widely respected. We believe that there are two key information which are missing in a P&L by function, and that is depreciation and labor cost. And those two information are really relevant to users and to analysts, especially these days, labor cost, which is not there in a P&L by function. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Alberto. Linda?
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment relative to the importance of unusual income and expenses in terms of the feedback we received. And obviously, a big portion of this feedback was from users. In the papers that were sent out, one of the questions that you asked us to think about ahead of time was, which proposals do you think are the most important for the success of this project and why? And so when we sat down and we looked at the feedback, and by the way, we did a lot of outreach on this particular project. I would say we did the most outreach on this project than we have done in a few years on any particular project because of the importance. And so when we looked at this, we came back and we sifted through and we said management performance measures are certainly important. The structure of the statement of profit and loss and defining operating profit is really important. And the third item was unusual income and expenses. And focusing on the fact that users really want to understand this because they're trying to decipher which expenses are going to reoccur and which ones aren't. And so it's the forward-looking information that they can glean from having this disclosure, and also trying to get this disclosure on a more comparable basis between entities. Now, we did make in our comment letter some concerns about the need to enhance the definition of what would be included in unusual income and expenses. But we do also believe that with this particular item added, there is a tendency amongst companies to disclose unusual expenses, but perhaps not so much unusual income. They have a tendency to do that. And so we think that this would give more important information and better information for users. So I just wanted to add to the notion that's really important. In our jurisdiction, that we didn't see the same thing that Alberto just commented on, that when we talked to users, they were quite happy with the expense information they were already getting. And when we probed on the notion of both by nature and by function, we couldn't get much support for that from our user base. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Is your office located at a highway, or is it just some noise from your computer?
No, to be quite honest, we had a computer problem this morning, so I borrowed my fiancé's computer, and I literally got on just before the meeting started, uh-huh. So we're just kind of doing our best.
You're going to sort this out with your fiancé. Okay, well, anyway, yeah. We can understand you loudly and clearly. Yes. Patrick?
Yes, I also want to express the view that you need to concentrate on the by function and by nature, presentations. I personally think that, the ideal situation would be to have both. I think that not having the by nature one might be a problem. And I would like to explain why. By function is an internal / management perspective of, you know, how businesses are operated. And that makes sense. But by nature is more, is more informational, in particular, if you want to link financial reporting with sustainability reporting. You know, because, for instance, in sustainability reporting, a big part of it would be dedicated to the workforce, so which has to be linked somehow to the financial information or mirrored by the financial information which is available. Same thing for, what is purchased and the supply chain and things like that. So, losing the by nature element might be an issue for understanding by external stakeholders, and also in order to that would make more difficult the linkage with sustainability information, in my view.
Okay, thank you, Patrick. Any other comments? Eugene.
Okay, thank you. Just a very quick comment on the unusual income and expense. The stakeholder expressed that it may be difficult for them to determine what would be the unusual income and expense based on the definition in the ED. They hope that the board can provide more clearer definition for the unusual income and expenses. For example, in the ED, the notion such as based on expectations about the future, several future annual reporting periods, they think that it's not very clear for them to make judgment. And in addition, some stakeholders hope the suggest the board provide some general principles regarding the unusual income and expenses, and so that each jurisdictions can introduce a specific definition based on its local laws or regulations. That's our comments. Thank you.
Okay, Mark.
Yeah, thank you. One comment really that follows on from the previous one, and that is that there was concern in our stakeholders about the potential for unusual items of income and expenditure to cause delay. But I think there was a question about the extent to which the board could actually manage that risk to timeliness by doing some early and pretty extensive field testing of the viability of the definitions as you might apply them. Because certainly otherwise there was a concern that there would be a significant risk to your project timetable.
Okay. All right. Then I think we move to the last item to discuss other items. Ilhom? Oh, sorry, yes.
Sorry, Hans. Sorry. I just like to kind of just summarize for myself what I've heard, and you know, some very, very helpful comments here. I think, and I'm so grateful that you are responding to most questions, like also most important, and then most risk to timelines, because we really need to consider those together. And clearly, the previous discussion so far has marked subtotals as most important. And the MPMs, but I heard discussion that, you know, about, I think it's fair to say there are risks to timelines there with expansion potentially, but on the disaggregation, it seems there's a lot of views that unusual are also part of this core benefits that this project can deliver together with MPMs and subtotals. But, you know, Mark, I think I agree with comments from that you have heard that there are risks to the delay, and thank you for those suggestions. And I just mentioned this in case others in the later comments want to make further suggestions, because I feel I've heard more about importance rather than the comments of how we manage the risks to the project timelines. And, you know, thank you again. I heard that there is difference in views on the importance of analysis by nature. I in particular appreciated Patrick's comment on the sustainability, because that is something we are thinking about in the team as well, and the linkages. But, you know, to assure Alberto, no decisions have been made. Clearly the board has to consider the feedback and the feasibility of what is proposed in the exposure draft, and, you know, taking into account also all the advice you've given us now. So that's all, Hans. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Aida. Ilhom?
Let's move to slide 16, other topics. We will also discuss in the deliberations, including other comprehensive income items, requirements carried over from IS 1, amendments to other IFR standards, transition and effective date. Move to slide 17. When it comes to project timing, the currently project timing is uncertain because of staged approach and linkage between proposals. Therefore, we will develop estimated timeline following initial discussion on these topics. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? No. One he.
Yes, thank you, Hans. Well, I didn't see comments from AOC members on questions topic by topic, so I just want to make additional comments on subtotals. Well, most AOC members who provided comments considered integral and non-integral associate joint venture proposal to be the greatest risk for project timeliness. Given the mixed feedback on this proposal and practical issues, members believe that a longer time would be needed to determine the direction of the proposal. So one member suggested that this topic be placed at a higher priority than other topics within the staged approach so that it could be discussed in a timely manner. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Wonhee. Aida, did you have anything to say, or is this the end of our discussions for this topic?
It looks like we have reached the end for today. I just want to again thank you all for the input, which we will consider. And I always find these discussions, as much as we think about topics, there's always some points we haven't considered or haven't considered in as much detail. So it's very helpful for the team as we go forward. And I also want to give special thanks to Hong, who has done a wonderful job today and who is actually leaving the team end of this week, going back to Kazbi, to Korea. So in future meetings, we will see him at the other side of the table and just thank him for his great contribution to Team PFS in the last 2 years.
Yes, Ilhong, thank you so much for all your efforts for the ISB. I hope you learned a lot and that you have a lot of knowledge to transfer to the KASB. Not that they need it, because they are really good as they are, but they have a very good tradition of bringing high-quality people to our offices, and we look forward to continuing that practice. So all the best back in Seoul.
Thank you so much. Thank you for everyone, everything. Thank you.
Good. Well, it's now 12:15 British time. I suggest, is it okay if we start at 12:30 for the next topic, the third agenda consultation, so that we take a 15-minute break as planned? I see no objection, so let's do that. We'll see each other back again 12:30 our time, 15 minutes. Thank you.